Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 234. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Dr. Jonathan Fast from the sandy beaches of Saudi Arabia. John, what's up?
There are some sandy beaches. There are also some sandy non-beaches.
Yeah, it's just sand.
It's just sand. That's all it is.
Are there lots of swimming pools in Saudi Arabia?
There are a lot of swimming pools in Saudi Arabia.
Are there really?
Yeah.
Cool. At least you got a swimming pool. I mean, imagine you could just have like a in-ground swimming pool surrounded by sand. That would probably be a bitch to use a filter, you know.
Right, and to keep clean. But you know what? There's a sandstorm right now outside. So it's like everything. When I got my oil changed and they changed out the air filter, they literally like pulled it. Like now I'll keep more – like I'll be more mindful of this, but it didn't even occur to me. They pulled the air filter out and it was literally like caked with sand. Like they smacked it against the floor to knock out the sand. I was like, oh, that must have been awesome for my engine. Like, it's just not something that you consider. You
it's a company car, though, right? Company car.
I mean, it is, but if it breaks, they're not. They're going to be like, what'd you do?
It's like your country broke my car.
Yeah, really. But it was amazing. I mean, it just, you don't consider that. You know what I mean? Like, where the hell did I grow up? I don't shake my air filter out.
Well, it's going to be a hot one here today in Massachusetts. It's supposed to hit 90, and the Boston Marathon is already giving out vouchers for people who think the heat will be too much, you know, so they can come back next year for free if they would like.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, take that for what you will. I still I do not watch the marathon. I already kind of get grossed out by watching people run down the street when I'm walking my dog. Enough. It's one of those things where like that should be a thing that you're only allowed to do until you're 18 years old or something like that, because it's just the way people try to run.
Right.
Or they try to get their bodies to move at a pace that's faster than walking. Is just gross.
And they just look so sad. That's why. Did you see the?
No, they look like usually in pain. Like they have a grimace.
Yeah. Well, that's what's so funny. You saw that like ridiculously photogenic guy meme that's going around. Someone was taking pictures of, I don't know, it was like a 5K or whatever it was, and it's like it's just a random picture where everyone in the picture has that look of like just disdain and pain in their faces, and then there's this one dude that happened to be looking right at the camera, just smiling like he's getting a pedicure and a manicure. He's just like all happy, content. It's the funniest thing. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that he's like, he was on like the Today Show or something. They were like talking to him, like, what was going on in your head? Jeez. It's really funny. You just put it in a search, it'll come up.
Cool. No, I will. If you can shoot me a picture of that, I will.
Yeah, I'm gonna do that right now.
Picture, it didn't happen, dog. So yeah, we got some cool stuff lined up for you this week. We're gonna have some topics we're gonna be hitting on. Also, gonna be going back into the mailbag very shortly. We're gonna be interviewing Lou Schuler and probably also Alan Cosgrove to talk about the new rules of lifting for life. We got some questions that were relevant in the mailbag that I think we're just going to save for them, in terms of, you know, just lifting for overall health and, you know, just trying to, you know, stay on the right track with that. So what we will do now, I don't think we have any other FitCast related news. I will say that I think that Body by Boy Online is a great resource. Check that out. Check out leadpeel.com. She just moved her members site over to a new server. I got an email about that this morning.
As did I. And the ridiculously photogenic guy is inboxed on Skype, bitch.
All right. So let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Listen to some music. So stick around. All right, we're back for this week's topic. I will mention, know, hopefully you guys are listening to the show every single week. We are putting one of these out every single week now. So make sure you're kind of going into the back episodes, so we're making sure that we don't repeat any kind of questions or segments that we've done in the past. And, I mean, it is pretty amazing. We've done three straight episodes in three straight
weeks. That is pretty amazing.
That's like a 400% increase in production.
Pretty much. And if you dare repeat a question, you will be banned from Pasta Night.
Blocked, and I will notify your local police authorities. All right, so
no tortellini for you. No pasta fagioli for you. You are banned.
Medium crab bisque. $2 for bread. No soup for you. Seinfeld. All right, three. Never mind. We're already recording. I almost did the countdown for it. But all right, so our topic for this week that I thought would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But we get a lot of questions. Like, one of the questions that we get a lot, and we got it this week too, is like, you know, who are the people that you look up to? And, you know, what are the trends that you guys feel are, you know, the most important or the most ridiculous in the industry? So this is where this topic kind of stems from. But the way that I presented it to Lee and John was what common recommendations from, you know, gurus do you think is just absolute BS? And, you know, that is kind of an issue that we see today with the internet. You can get your voice heard by many people very easily. And the fitness industry is a great example of how you can be very successful by just kind of using the internet the right way to get your voice or your methodology out there to the public. And if you hit on the right demographic, then you're pretty much good to go. So, John, I'll have you kind of start off with this. And again, I think you picked a really good example, and I'm hoping you kind of go in depth on this a little bit.
Well, thank you, Kevin. I'd be happy to. I kind of did a two for one. Because I know that I've mentioned the first one a couple times, but it is a pet peeve of mine. It's the idea that knee extensions are bad for you. And in some sense, it's the idea that any exercise is bad for you per se. There are some maybe that we consider better than others, but specifically knee extensions. And the reason why I zero in on that is, to me, that to me in my personal experience almost started the kind of the way that we think now in terms of the multi-joint exercises and lift heavy and getting away from like the bodybuilder mentality. And knee extensions seem to be like that pariah. And people have brought up either – it's not research, but they'll bring up like formulas, you know, models, like mechanical models, and this is why a knee extension is bad for you, and these are the forces, and this is what it does. And the fact of the matter is, not only is that wrong, but there is an enormous world of research that shows that it's wrong. It's not just because I say it's wrong. It's because the research is there. And my experience with that, it was actually in my residency where we were going over this, because it is the basis of ACL rehabilitation, anterior knee pain, pretty much any knee issue you have. Chances are an isolated quad exercise like a knee extension is part of that evidence-based protocol. They use it in the evidence. They examine the importance of the quadriceps on knee and patella health, all kinds of stuff. And it's just, I mean, just miles of research there. And I was looking at this stuff going, but I thought knee extensions are bad for you. And they were looking at me like I was crazy. And it occurred to me, I fell for exactly what I'm complaining about now. It's the idea that you read something, you hear it enough, you see it enough repeated, you know, from gurus, from forums, whatever, and you start to believe that it's true. And the fact of the matter is, it is entirely not. I don't know that that means that you necessarily go out and start programming knee extensions into your workouts. It's specific. It's a specific exercise to increase quadriceps strength. If there's quadriceps weakness, then that can absolutely be an evidence-based inclusion in your workouts if your quads are weak. If they're not, then I don't know that you necessarily need to do that. And I wouldn't necessarily stop you. I just wouldn't spend a whole lot of time on it. If I did, it'd be, you know, an accessory lift just like anything else. But I think that this is dangerous. And I actually read once, just randomly, I was in a forum and I saw someone say something that they had knee pain and their medical doctor had recommended that he do some exercises like knee extensions. And the very next response was, well, I would never go to any doctor that would tell me to do knee extensions because they obviously don't know what they're talking about. And no surprise, that person was the one that didn't know what they were talking about. So I think things like that are actually dangerous because they can, in the least, reduce the effectiveness of any kind of rehab or pain strategy that you may be involved in, either from a professional or something you're doing yourself because you have a little bit of knee pain and you thought, well, maybe I should, you know, get my knee stronger, and then someone's going to tell you no, and that may have been the wrong advice. But it's also that sort of thing where now practitioners that actually understand the research and are knowledgeable in the research are being made to look like fools by people that obviously don't know the research. So I think that that's a pretty important point, and it's something to consider that just because a guru says something, it doesn't make it that it's wrong, but it doesn't mean that it's right either. And you need to do your own homework and find out, well, is there really evidence to suggest that a knee extension will hurt your knees? And if there's no evidence for that, is there any evidence against it? And in this case, there is. On taking it slightly back, though, that second guru recommendation is just the use of the term quad dominant. I'm not a big fan of that. Knee dominant, maybe, but even so, I understand the purpose, and I think it's good in intent. It's trying to separate the idea of a lower body pulling from a lower body pushing. But the problem is that to me, quad dominant, and I've seen this repeated a few times from people, you know, asking me questions, it implies that the quads are very strong and the hips are very weak. But the fact of the matter is you can have weak hips and weak quads. And it may be just as important to strengthen the quads as it is to strengthen the hips. So you'll have people kind of pound the idea of these hip dominant exercises like Romanian deadlifts and glute ham raises and you know, whatever type exercise, you know, deadlifts and pick your poison. And it may very well be the case that along with some hip strengthening, we still need to strengthen the quads. So I don't love that categorization. And I think that it can do you a disservice. It may have more to do with rehab at that point, but I still think as a general term, it's very important to have quad and hip strength. And it's not one or the other, and it's not a preference of one exercise versus the other. Things should be balanced. And in fact, most of the research that we look at in terms of what a balanced leg strength would be shows that the quad should be stronger. So I think that it's one of these things where the pendulum really swung to the other side, where we used to be bodybuilder oriented and everything we could see in a mirror. So people pushed against that and said, what about the importance of pulling and the importance of pulling on the health of the shoulders and the importance of pulling on the health of the hips and the knee? And all that is true. But let's not forget the quads are a vital structure in our lower body, and they deserve prominence and the importance that we need to place on them. And terms like, you know, quad dominant or knee dominant make it very easy for someone to say, well, I don't want to be quad dominant. I don't want to be one of those bodybuilders, and everything I do is, I'm not going to do anything with, you know, strictly like that. And it, I think you're going to end into possibly fall into some problems that way.
But my question to you would be, you would never prescribe knee extensions, or I'm sorry, leg extensions.
Absolutely. Absolutely have. 100%. If I have
in a non-rehab program,
if
just some dude in a non-rehab,
right? In a non-rehab program, I probably have. If I'm dealing with someone that's a newbie, beginner, like in person, it's possible. The way that you really find out if the quads are weak are tools that we don't have in regular personal training, you know, health and fitness stuff. It's like superimposed burst testing, things that are more in the realm of like rehab professionals. But if I felt for some reason that someone's quads, the timing and strength were off, I'd have no problem in assigning that for sure. But would they be the first thing they did? Absolutely not. they would go through what we would consider to be a normal programming, you know, your lunges and squats and whatever. But would I have a problem throwing, you know, two sets of them in at the end? Absolutely not. I have no problem doing that.
Okay.
There's no reason not to. Yeah. I but that is, I mean, again, you have to kind of, you know, what are you looking for? It's very difficult to you're not going to see something like a quad lag, which is what we would do clinically after like surgery to see what the strength of the quads is. So again, it's how, you know, how do you do this in a gym setting? I mean, in a sense, I think that you could do things like patellar tracking or looking at what might be giving up in, like, you know, if you were doing a deadlift or a squat, you know, where are they finding weakness? I mean, the formula for making a muscle stronger is a combination of isolated and combined exercise. I mean, that's the formula. That's how we get things stronger. As we get stronger and as we start to balance out strength, the isolation exercise is probably less important. But, you know, don't make any mistake. There's no difference between a knee extension and, you know, a face pull or eyes TYs. You know what I mean? No one seems to have problems with doing these things for the shoulder, but there's no reason to not do them for anything like the lower extremities as well, you know, including stuff like, you know, hamstring curls and whatever. There are just other strategies and other ways to do them, and we consider the other ways to probably be a little bit better. I don't think that I would assign a hamstring curl for someone, because I think that there are things like shelks and other exercises that are probably a little bit more satisfying to do in terms of getting the entire body involved. But for a knee extension, I'd have no problem assigning it.
Very interesting. Yeah. All right.
And again, you know what? Then that's kind of like what we were talking about. We mentioned this a few episodes back. It's like you have to look at a full program. You know, if someone has a bunch of stuff that we would agree with, and then at the very end they programmed a hamstring curl, am I really complaining about a hamstring curl? Go to town, have fun, who cares? You know what I mean? It's not, and that's the point, it's not going to harm you. And we may feel now that there are better ways to cause a hypertrophy or even a usable strength, but if that's what someone does, I'm not complaining about that. I don't really care. But if their whole programming is knee extensions and leg curls and leg press and the kind of standard bodybuilding
then
stuff that we
huge. Respect,
right, then they're huge.
huge.
Then I would say that this is probably not such a great program. But single exercise, there's very few things that I think everyone should stay away from.
All right. All right, cool. If you guys have some feedback, letting us know what your what you think, you know,
guru junk.
Some gurus recommend that you think is junk. You can submit it, and we'll talk about it on next week's episode. Just go up on Facebook. Make sure you add John and myself and Lee as friends on Facebook, and then just tag us in your response, and we will grab it and read it out. All right, I'll hit on mine. This is kind of a multi-prong, a multi-step argument that I'm going to make. But I think this does come with an oversaturation of information right now, where, you know, people are always trying to differentiate themselves or find the new hotness. John already found the new hotness, but I mean the new hotness. In the best way I can put this is first kind of talking about the people themselves, the fitness professionals who are writing about stuff and, you know, trying to write articles or blog posts to just stir some crap up, and to get some traffic that tends to not be super beneficial to the overall picture that, you would want to paint in terms of training programs and nutrition and stuff like that. But one of the things that you see a lot, and you see it on like T-Nation, you'll see it on like DVDs that come out and stuff like that. People looking for kind of like new exercises and new ways to train a movement pattern or a new way to do a certain movement that maybe going out to an audience that cannot already perform the movement pattern that it is a progression of. Like, you know, lots of single leg progressions and, you know, sometimes just kind of taking exercise and just kind of making a mockery out of it. For the sense of like, hey, this looks cool.
For example,
see, this is a thing. I don't want to get into like specific examples because then I get into a problem of calling people out.
I call people out. Who cares?
I kind of care because, you know, I am, you know, kind of, you know, I don't want to offend anyone, but I think our audience is, you know, our audience is smart enough to weed this stuff out. And that was my second point, that you never can be too critical of the people that you follow and what you're reading. This is a Mike Boyle thing that he says a lot, but you know, if you kind of like walk out to get the paper in the morning and you know, you hear a squish when you're walking out to get the paper, and then you look down at your foot, it looks like shit, it smells like shit, it's probably shit.
That's the sniff test, my friend.
Yeah. So I think before you kind of read something or you hear something or you watch something and you think it's like, oh my God, this is exactly the program that I needed. This is the perfect article. This is the article that I was looking for the whole time. Be critical. Make sure that you look at what they've promoted in the past or what you've done in the past and what's worked for you. And if you don't have to just do something different to do something different. Make sure if you're going to be doing something different in your programming or your training or your nutrition, make sure there's a reason why you're changing it. Make sure there is like John was just talking before, like, oh yeah, just go have fun in the gym. I'm all for that. But if you end up just making a mockery of an exercise just because you're trying to do it and it looks terrible, I'm a big
How about this? How about there was a video that went around on Facebook that was showing some guy from CrossFit doing barbell snatches.
Okay.
No, barbell snatches, but in combination, he was jumping onto a platform while he was doing it. It was a box. So he was doing jumping barbell snatches onto a box. Clearly.
But I wouldn't even say that person is someone that I would respect as a
No, but as far as like when we're describing silly exercises, because I think it's like, you know, it's like, what are we talking about? What is a silly exercise? Like, I could easily see someone looking at that and going, that makes perfect sense. Like, is this guy guru kind of following whatever? No, he's some CrossFit guy who whatever. But, you know, absolutely, there could be some silliness around that just seems like the new hotness, like you said, and it's just kind of nonsense when you break it down.
Yeah, all I'm saying is that don't overcomplicate things for yourself just to do something that you saw in an article or you saw in a video of someone that, you know, not to be judgmental, but, you know, might have more, you know, an older training age than you and it might have, you know, a little bit more ability in the weight room. I just hate seeing that I hate seeing it in Facebook saying like, you know, people are in the comments of articles saying, oh, I can't wait to like go to the gym tomorrow and try these out. And it's, you know, again, it's still the case of there's so many people out there that can't even perform like basic movements correctly where they're just trying to jump ahead. They're skipping a couple steps and they wonder why, you know, 3 months down the road, why am I not stronger? There's a reason why you're not stronger. I guess it's the concept that you have to do dumb crap to get stronger and you can't just do the basics to get stronger. It's two sides of it where there's obviously the powerlifting crowd that, you know, I'm going to do these four lifts and I'm going to get super strong. Damn right. But then there's this other side that, you know, I get to do one arm, single legged deadlifts with a pause at the bottom. And I'm going to make sure that I have a band around my neck for extra resistance. And then it's going to be a nice little variable. So it's going to be heaviest at the top. Like before you do all that, make sure you can do a single-legged deadlift or make sure that you can, you know, walk properly and not fall on your ass while you're just trying to
get in a position.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's just getting to be kind of weird. And I believe our audience is very intelligent, and just make sure if you're reading something, like, stick with what you like, but make sure that you are still critical of the people that you follow. And if I said something that was dumb, don't be afraid to, like, email and say, why the hell would you say this? We need further clarification. Does it, in what situations does it make sense? But yeah, that's my rant. I don't know how you feel about that, John, but that's just something that I guess is kind of built up. And it was one of the reasons why I become a little bit more, I've kind of taken a step back in the industry stuff and kind of just focused on my little corner of the industry instead of making it broader.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, there's two things at work here. That on one hand, when you have people that it, and it's just like what you said in the beginning, like, I think we all use the internet for business or for exposure or whatever. I mean, that's what you have to do. It's a modern age, you know. And if you have any interest in getting information out to the public, that's how you do it. But there are other people that basically make, like, they just break into the industry and suddenly they're internet e-guru trainers that have never really trained anybody, have never really worked with anybody, and that are just either just kind of writing about what they do in the gym but making it seem like they train others or whatever. You know what I mean? I think that's there's a big difference between, you know, someone like your boss, like Mike Boyle, putting out a blog post, who's been in this industry, you know,
30 years
long. Yeah. As much as most everyone else has been alive for, versus someone that just got out of school and, you know,
started up a blog or like just started, like they had the time to shoot a bunch of videos and.
Right. Exactly. I mean, and I think that's the difference, because you do, I've always been sensitive to the idea that, you know, there was a big consensus about, like, well, who have you trained and what have you done? And there's some decent reasoning for that. I don't think it's everything, though. I don't think that you can just say, well, whoever's been training the longest with the most people must be the best trainer. I mean, that's obviously not the truth, and it's a combination. But there is no question that you learn from your clients, you learn from your experiences, and you learn from every, you know, class that you've taught or every, you know, client or clients that you've had or any patient or whatever. So you get a lot of this kind of nonsense stuff because it's, you know, someone trying to make a name for themselves, doesn't have a lot of experience, and so they're coming up with you know, kind of nonsense. And the problem is that if you get enough people listening to that, and if they're convincing, because on the internet everyone has the same voice, then you run into trouble. You know, again, and that's why guru speak can be a problem, because everyone has the same voice on the internet. And in fact, it's not about so much what you've done, because you can just lie. Oh, I just deadlifted 600 pounds. Do you know I'm lying or not? You know what I mean? Like, anyone can say anything that they want with no verification. But besides that, it's your argument style. Yeah, I know some very convincing, eloquent speakers on the internet that don't know what they're talking about, but it sure as hell sounds like they do, because they can speak well.
You know, three people.
Right, right. You know, but that's the thing. So it's much more difficult. Like, now, take, for example, you know, if we go into a true, you know, a gym setting or whatever, you've got coaches there, you've got people that you understand have qualifications, you can visually see what they're doing, and you can see, and then you can talk to them. You get a lot of information when you do, quote, you know, a traditional evaluation of a trainer. But when you're on the internet and someone writes a blog, I mean, you don't know what kind of information you're getting, and that can be dangerous. So the idea that they're coming up with these wacko exercises, and I've seen a few where I'm just like, that's pretty dumb. You know, why would, and people, you see the posts underneath it or whatever, of everyone, oh, that sounds great, I'm going to try it. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, if you could try anything, but it doesn't mean that it's a good idea. So, no, I understand where you're coming from. It's that sort of thing. The longer you've been around, the more you realize that there's less variation and less stuff to choose from. It's true. I mean, when I was first a trainer, I had a binder of exercises. I had, you know, just tons of exercises written down on a piece of paper. Now, honestly, like, if I use a tenth of that, You know what I mean? Because it's just there's just stuff that you just don't use anymore because you realize it's not as effective. It's not, you know, quote unquote, functional to purpose for your client or whatever. There's a lot of stuff like that that's really just doesn't get touched anymore. But if you're trying to make a name for yourself, just talking about squats and deadlifts are probably not only like a niche thing in many ways because most they're for the majority of exercisers, they're not really interested in that. But the fact of the matter is, if you're trying to differentiate yourself from the rest of the world of bloggers out there, then yeah, you know, oh, look at me doing this windmill, you know, barbell complex on a, you know, standing on one leg and I'm going to explain why this is the greatest exercise. And people, there are going to be people that buy it. And it's frustrating because, again, if you don't know whose voices are worth listening to, then everyone seems to be equal. And for the people that have put in the time and effort to become educated and to become better, it can be, you can get washed out in the loud voices of people making a lot of noise, but not really saying much.
All right. Well, we'll leave that up to you guys for further discussion. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with a mailbag. Just stick around. Time for the mailbag, John. I'm going to be throwing this one to you first. It's from Frankie. Love the show, Kevin. It's very entertaining, great source of information, and changing lives. It's definitely part of my fitness life. I'm a big fan of Alan Cosgrove, but I am also a fan of Jonathan Fast, and of course, all of you guys on the FitCast. The question I have is, Fast, is there any scientific proof that crunches are bad for your spine? My client saw a video on Ace Fitness from Jonathan Ross that crunches are totally safe to do. I love to give my clients lots of variety when it comes to core exercise, but I'd rather exclude exercise that may be harmful. I appreciate your input. Thanks.
I guess what it really boils down to is what you consider to be proof. I think that's the issue. Now, I haven't seen the video from Jonathan Ross, but I did read the article that he wrote that was on Ace, and I honestly wasn't really very impressed with it. In essence, it was just it was a continuation of the article that Brett Contreras and who was his co-author? Do you remember? It was they published an article in the Strength and Conditioning Journal that was basically debating the findings of Stu McGill. So Stuart McGill is really probably the one of, if not the lead researcher in back and spine health, in preventative health. There's a lot of research that's done, as you would imagine, on the rehabilitation of the back and the spine after an injury, coming out of McKenzie, coming out of just tons of different places. But Pittsburgh does a lot of research there. There's some research at Delaware, but the preventative side, Stuart McGill has really popularized this idea of not doing crunches. And he's also written two books, one more technical than the other, but they're both fairly accessible so that anyone can pretty much read them and understand what the argument is. That's where we get this idea of that crunches are bad for the back. There is a pushback to that research. A lot of, not all the research, but a lot of it is based on this pig spine model, because obviously you can't say, well, I'm going to get 20 people that have never exercised and then I'm just going to have them do crunches for 6 weeks and see what happens. Number one, you probably won't find anything because 6 weeks is a very short period of time. And this, the argument here is that it's a cumulative effect over many years, many cycles. But two, you'll never pass that against a board. When you present research ideas, they have to be approved. They have to be approved that they're safe and that there's reason and ethical cause for producing this research. You can't just go out and do whatever you want. This would never pass an ethical board because in effect, you're trying to cause injury. So we'll never be able to do a study like that. And that kind of study would take far too long and would probably not even be very conclusive because they're just so many variables when it comes to spine health. So what Stuart McGill did was used a pig model, the pig spine, which biomechanically is very similar to an adult spine, and he put him through, you know, thousands of these bending cycles, and saw that there was disc herniation, you know, all kinds of issues caused by this continual stress cycle. But he's done a lot more than that. It's not just a pig model. We didn't just do that and say, oop, looks, there's a herniation, so no one should crunch, because no one would accept research like that. The research that Stuart McGill does is very vastly encompassing, deals with a lot of not only athletes pre-injury, but a ton of athletes post-injury as well. So the answer is, do I have proof that crunches are bad for the spine? I have evidence. I don't have a great deal of individual high quality evidence, but I do have a great deal of reasonable quality evidence. So there's not that number one paper that you point to that says, see, look, this proves that crunches are bad, but you have literally books written on the evidence, on the amount of evidence that shows that this is probably not a good idea. The arguments from Jonathan Ross, you know, based on Brett's arguments, I didn't find them to be very convincing, and I think the reason being is because there are alternatives to a crunch. I think that people that want to continue to crunch, for whatever, maybe they're just good at it, maybe they just enjoy it, they've done it all their lives, and look, my back is fine, and that's not specifically evidence. Plus, to the fact that for some people, that's absolutely correct. I'm sure there are people that could crunch their entire life and not have a problem, but there are also people that could be crunching for even just a couple of months and start to develop issues with their back and pain and posture. So the argument there is, if there are reasonable alternatives to crunches, like anti-extension exercises, anti-side flexion, anti-rotation, these exercises have been shown to be at least as good as crunches in terms of activating musculature for hypertrophy and strength and whatever. There's a reasonable argument for why this is a more functional purpose of the abs, and why we shouldn't be looking to cause motion. We should actually be looking to resist motion. Then, to me, I think that you're taking the safe answer and you're saying, you know what? I don't know for fact that crunches are bad, and it is entirely possible that 10 years from now we may have an entire world of evidence that suggests otherwise. But if I'm not giving up anything by giving out crunches, and I may be gaining, then I prefer to do something that's safer and probably equally as effective, if not more so effective. So that's why I would argue not to do crunches. But in general, the quote unquote evidence, there's no evidence that Jonathan Ross, or in my opinion, Brett, came out with. It was really just arguing down the evidence that's been presented against crunches, and that's just an argument that they're not evidencing, you know, contrary evidence. They're not showing something different. They're just saying, well, I don't like your evidence. So if that's the case, then you have to, like I said, are you losing anything by not doing crunches? And I would say that you're probably not. So at worst, you don't gain anything, but at best, you do gain spine health.
Spine health is good.
Yeah. But that's what it is. It's do no harm. So, you know, like I said, I read those articles from both of them, and it just, you know, they presented arguments. I just didn't find them to be convincing enough to suggest that I should not trust the evidence that's been presented, or feel that I'm somehow losing something if I trust that evidence, even if it turns out to be false. If it turned out to be false, what did I lose? I just didn't do any crunches. But if it does turn out to be correct, then I probably gained something. So that, to me, is where that argument falls apart.
Cool. You know, I just want to hit on this briefly. And the way I've always looked at it is, you know, you have to kind of look at the person that you're training and make sure and make an assessment that way. If you have someone that has a history of back problems, or they're, you know, they're not trained, doing crunches will probably cause some issues. But if you have someone that's been training for a while and they can – you know, hold a plank for 2 minutes and they have no real crazy asymmetry issues, they've had no history of low back pain, they don't ever come to you with problems with low back pain, and they want to do some crunches and you want to program some crunches just for funsies,
right?
You're not going to kill them.
Right. Their head isn't going to explode from right from doing a couple crunches. And I don't think anybody's making that argument. And it does seem to be a cumulative effect.
No, but people like to take, you know, take stuff like this and then run with it and say like,
right.
Oh, God, I saw some dude doing crunches at the gym today. What a dumbass. Like,
right. What? Yeah. And it's like, who cares? But, yeah. You know, but the one thing that I will say, and this is interesting, and this is more of an anecdotal experience, but I find that people that have been prone to doing, you know, crunches and more of that style of abdominal training, when they do something like a plank or a side plank, you see a very rectus dominant positioning. So their plank is with a rounded back, almost like they're trying to crunch the floor rather than having a neutral spine. And that's an interesting kind of thing to see, because if you're doing a plank or any type of anti-extension activity for the idea of either health or performance, then obviously a rounded back plank is a poor plank, and it's not.
I think also some people run into the problem of like not understanding that some kind of lumbar extension is okay and that's natural.
Right.
You know, in that plank position, like people think that it should be perfectly flat. And unfortunately, if you ever looked at, you know, a skeleton or the human body, that's not how the spine is aligned.
Right, and that's what happens when you do a crunch, because you're basically taking a system of musculature that we feel is designed to, again, prevent motion and to stabilize the position through activity. So if I'm running, I don't want to spin my lumbar spine around while I run. There'll be a certain amount of that, but I don't want to just run off of my back, so to speak. I want to run off my hips. Then the core is very important in maintaining that type of alignment. If I'm, let's say, this front rectus abdominant dominant, where abdominal dominant, where it's like I'm crunching, 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 then I may have started to disrupt that type of pattern. And when I feel that sort of threat response, when I brace, that brace comes as a crunch. And that's not only an unstable position in terms of the spine, because now we have a bent spine. So if we are trying to apply force and coming through the spine, that's a bad position to be in, and we know that for a fact. But on top of it, we're going to either, again, cause that injury because it's a bad position, or we're going to lose force, the idea of a force leak, the idea that we're not moving on a solid platform. But there are probably performance reasons why you would not want to do a crunch as the primary part of your routine. But again, unless you feel that there's some kind of performance issue where you took out crunches and somehow you're less strong or less proficient in your activity or your sport or whatever it is, and I can't think of why that would be. But if that's the case, then maybe you want to balance performance and health. You know what I mean? Every athlete does. But I can't imagine why that would be. I can't imagine anything, including, you know, BJJ players and wrestlers and things like that as well. I mean, it just – there's no – I can't make an argument for a crunch personally.
Cool.
So that's where I would go with that. Kevin?
Yeah, no, I think that's where we're going to wrap it up, because
we're going to wrap it up.
We're running out of time here. I got to go into the facility. So all right. Well, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Key points to drive home. Crunches will not rip a hole in the space-time continuum.
But they might in your spine.
Yeah, you'll probably tear your spine in half.
Right.
There's
a lot of stuff back there. Just one more thought that just occurred to me. But it's not just the disc, too. There's a lot of stuff back there, and it's probably not meant to be repeatedly flexed like that. It's just, again,
yeah, I mean, we're talking about, like, 20 crunches a week. There's two levels. There's a dude that's like waking up every morning doing 100 push-ups and 100 crunches.
Right.
And then there's like the person that's doing 3 sets of 8 once a week.
But you know what? I'll put this forward as an argument to that, although I generally agree with you. I do generally agree that, hey, you know what? If I sit on the floor and do a couple crunches, I'm not going to blow my back out. But the problem is this. If we look at the other evidence, we know that the prevalence of disc herniation in the spine and spine problems overall, and dormant spine problems, not people walking around in pain, but just people that have disc issues. 80% of the population The adult population has some type of disc herniation. We know that a crunch or a flexion of the spine will cause further herniation of that the nucleus propulsus, of the inside of the disc. So that next crunch could be the crunch that causes pain, could be, you know, nerve interference and things like that. So the problem is this, that even though you're asymptomatic, it's – I mean, look, we're not going to walk around in fear and think the next move we make is going to blow our back out. But there is a fact to say, again, it's like Russian roulette. The chances are you pull the trigger, the bullet isn't in the chamber.
Yeah.
But does that mean that it's probably good to play Russian roulette because it's fun? You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's the argument there. I could do crunches and never have a problem, and the guy next to me could do crunches and he could. And there's no explanation for that. And you can't just do an MRI and figure out who's good to do a crunch and who's not. So because we don't have enough information on any individual, right, I don't know that it's worth it. That's the argument.
All right. So the drive home point with this is that if you don't want to take any risk in life, just don't glide through life without even, you know, risking anything. You just end up being alone and dead. You can do planks. If you want to be adventurous and you want to have ripped abscesses with a T and a Z,
I swear you're an idiot.
Then you can do crunches 9 to 5.
It's kind of ironic that in the same episode, I argued about how we should do knee extensions. Well, we can do knee extensions because there's no evidence against it. And then I said we shouldn't do crunches because there's yin and yang there.
Yeah, you know, and I think Stuart McGill is like probably the smartest bat guy ever in the world. And you know, I always when I see him perform better, talking. I mean, my dog's like crawling onto my lap and is smelling the microphone because he wants to go out. But the you know, every time I see him, I'm just like, this dude is awesome. I'm totally down with everything that he's saying. And then at the end of the day, I'm like, But my spine is not like a pig spine. I have a human.
But it is. It is like a pig spine, but it's not. The reasonable knock against it is that it's not like an in vitro pig spine, meaning that they take dissected pig spine, you know, from outside. But again, if that was the only thing that Stuart McGill did, then I would be more inclined to agree that we need more evidence. Because that wouldn't be convincing enough. But if you look through his research, there's a lot more than just that. And there's a lot more from other sources as well. So it's not just that. It's the basis of the basic idea. That's true.
Playing the Jurassic Park theme to wrap this up. So, all right, that is going to do it for this week's show. You can always submit questions through Facebook or to questions@theficast.com. That is... you know, you can always check us out on iTunes, subscribe on there, leave a comment. In the off-topic discussion, we're going to be talking about why Pixar movies make us cry, the Fringe possibly getting renewed for a fifth season, and I think that's about it.
Yeah, you said why we cry?
Yeah, and breaking news, the United States is no longer... the fattest country in the world.
Really? Liar.
Nope, this is breaking news. Let me pull up the story real quick. One more story. I got 5 minutes. I'll pull this up real quick. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds.
I give you 3 because you're that special to me.
Crap. Of course I closed the stupid window like 2 minutes ago. Give me... John, talk about... explosive calf raises.
Dude, now that's an exercise everybody should do. I greatly appreciated that you brought that back. Dude, I think that needs to be like an annual. That needs to be like, you know, April 10th is explosive calf raise day or something. You know, whatever day that was. Like, that needs to be an annual event. I love that.
We'll do it on Jackie Robinson Day.
Yeah, man. Yeah, happy Jackie Robinson Day to everybody.
Yeah, so we shot that video when I was lifting at Crunchy Performance once.
A fine example of a good lifter throwing in something silly at the end, and who cares? You know, honestly, who cares?
Best question was like, Does this really help improve your performance?
No. Probably not.
God, I hate going on the Daily Mail UK website. There's always the most depressing stories on
there.
Dude,
you just read this. How do you not remember?
Hold on.
Oh, boy.
Hold on.
Oh, boy.
Dead air.
I don't know.
Oh, here we go. I found it. I don't know how to pronounce this country, but it's Q-A-T-A-R.
Qatar? Oh, Qatar. Wow.
Qatar is now officially the wealthiest and unhealthiest nation in the world. Of about two million people, looks like 17% have diabetes, and birth defects are at an alarmingly high rate now. They have great things like bacon wrapped meatloaf and deep fried cheese.
Wait, Qatar has it's got to be fake bacon. Qatar is a Muslim country.
Well, maybe that's a joke from the story itself. But do you know where this? Where is this country?
In the Middle East.
That's what I figured. I just didn't want to say that. Because it had a Middle Eastern sounding name.
Yes.
All right. Well, that is it for this week's show.
See you next week.
Welcome to the off-topic discussion. John and I are here. I think Lee is running a little late, so we're going to get started without her.
Because time flies.
Yeah, dude, I totally caught up on Fringe, and this upcoming week's episode looks unbelievable. And there is pretty good news that the show is going to get picked up for a fifth season. I don't know how, but... the ratings haven't been very good, but it looks like it's going to get picked up for a fifth and final season.
Sometimes they kind of do that, like they're good enough, and if it's not,
what's Fox do? What's on Fox that's like people watch besides American Idol?
The Simpsons.
Well, besides that, and Family Guy, there's one night a week. People and do people really watch The Simpsons?
I think they do. It's been on for like 30 years.
But I don't know. The I picked up a $200 Donkey Kong yesterday, and I took the board out of that and put it into my Donkey Kong because the board works better than the one that was in mine. Pretty dope. Thinking about converting it to a Donkey Kong 3. I don't know if you ever played that.
I really don't remember, dude.
Yeah, I never even played that as a kid. I never played that like. At an actual machine in my life. I played it on, like, emulators, but that's cool. Got almost done with the second season of The West Wing.
Oh, that's cool.
Which you don't watch?
No.
That's pretty good.
But it is a good show. That I'm fairly confident in saying.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Trying to think what else. I was super busy last week, didn't you
cut me off last week or something, and I had something to actually contribute to this stupid off topic, and the book.
What book?
Exactly, The New Rules of Lifting.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that on the actual show.
Oh.
Because that's right.
I won't be around. Yeah, but I won't be here.
We'll talk about it today. I finished it, so.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you think?
That was pretty good.
Yeah. Did you like my part the best?
You were in like the notes section, dude.
Yeah. Did you like my part the best?
No.
Oh, okay. I mean, more than a notes, you son of a bitch.
I just like to downgrade everything you do.
Right.
The, I'm trying to think. I swear I saw something, man. I heard Cabin in the Woods is really good. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, no kidding. Got great reviews.
Oh, you know, what I was poking around, Trailer Addict, the new trailer for time travel movie Looper came out with Bruce Willis and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh, yeah. Is that looking any good?
Yeah, it looks pretty good. It did, I mean, yeah. It didn't really have a lot, and it's... it looks like it's more action than sci-fi.
Right.
But it just, you know, it's about a guy who is hired as, he's a hitman.
Hitman, yeah.
He's a hitman, but people get sent from the future to the past and he kills them in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can't find their bodies in the future or something. So it's a little bit easier to clean up. And then he ends up having himself, his future self, sent back to the past, and he is forced to kill his future self, which is pretty messed up.
Hmm.
So Bruce Willis plays his future self. That was pretty interesting. Have you seen the trailer for Rise of the Guardians?
Yes. That's actually looks kind of
dude, that looks awesome. Kind of
fun, yeah.
That it looks actually so does look good. Kind
of fun. Yeah.
Like so
what's
badass.
His name? What's his name from Lord of the Rings? Isn't it Peter? Who produced it?
Peter Jackson.
Yeah, I think it's either Peter Jackson or someone like crazy. Where it's like, wow, this could be really good because it's like a you know a very good movie maker.
Yeah, I think it might. He might be like a producer or something on it.
Yeah, something like that. Executive producer.
You know, it is. I never watched the animated movies, one, because I know I'm just going to like end up crying at the end of those of the Pixar movies. So I usually like when I think I don't know if I cried at the end of what was the one where like the robot
everyone
in space
and Bambi.
What's the robot in space one? Oh my God, how can I not remember this?
Wally?
Yeah, dude, that was oh man, especially when like he almost didn't get his memory back. I'm like,
one cries at Wally. Everyone cries. That's what Pixar does, except for Toy Story. No one cares about Toy Story.
I haven't even seen the third one yet. I totally.
I've seen pieces. It's a good movie, but that wasn't tear inducing. And I'm a baby. I'll cry at anything. Just give me an excuse to cry. Yeah.
Yeah, but I totally just can't
open up a shopping center and I'm crying like, oh, it's so beautiful and modern.
What's that?
They open up a new shopping center and I'll start crying. Yeah. It's so beautiful and modern. So touched. So many people have jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although Cars, I thought was terrible. I don't know why people like that movie.
Cars is okay. Didn't leave a lasting impression. This is the worst off topic ever.
I haven't seen Up. I watched like the first 15 minutes of Up. No,
dude, don't even worry about crying the last 5 minutes. You'll cry your face off the first 5 minutes.
Oh no, I saw the first like 15 minutes about the old guy's life. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, you cry your face off.
I was like, screw this. I'm going to watch Transporter 2.
It's horrible. It's so sad. And they're freaking cartoons. And you're crying your face off. And you know you shouldn't be. And you have to like punch yourself in the leg to man up. It's ridiculous. Stupid ass Disney and stupid ass Pixar.
Well, here's some breaking news. That you reported yesterday that Jason Statham is turning down a
correct
role in Fast 6 and Fast 7.
Correct.
Which breaks my heart on multiple levels. But, you know, it's going to be okay. And Michelle Rodriguez is the character that comes back from the dead in every movie because she is not only coming back from the dead in the upcoming Fast and Furious movie – but also in the upcoming Resident Evil movie.
Oh, really?
Is that, if that's not messed up, she's in Resident Evil 6, no,
10. 5. Dude, the last one, I did watch the last one because it was on TV here, and like, I'll watch anything if it's in English. That was a horrible movie.
Oh, it was so good.
Oh my
the,
God.
The 3D with the one with the huge guys with the axes.
Yeah. Dude, oh my good. God, that was horrible.
And you know what? They already scheduled the next two, so they got 6 or 5 coming out, and then they're still working on 6. Oh, it makes tons of money, and they're super cheap to make.
I know, it does. I know, and it was horrible. And look, not for nothing, Mila Jovovich is still a lovely, lovely woman, but she does look kind of old now. I mean, she's like in her...
John likes him young.
Yeah, John likes him young. John likes him, you know...
She's like 30.
No, she's not like 30, you twit.
I'm going to find out. I bet she's like 30 or 31. I'm finding out right now.
I guarantee you she's not. I guarantee you she's not.
Wow, she was born in 75, fact. So she's what, 30...
8.
Wow. 37. No,
37. I would have said 40, though. God, I'm so old.
Oh, yeah, man, that was so long ago. She was in The Fifth Element. That was the first movie that I saw her in.
Right.
Revolver.
Well, that was her debut.
No, I mean, she was in a bunch of movies before that, including Parker Lewis Saves the World.
Was she really?
Or Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Remember that show?
I thought Fifth Element was her first movie.
No. She was also in Dazed and Confused.
But that was after Fifth Element.
Nope, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
Dazed and Confused came out 4 years before Fifth
Element. Oh, yeah, that's right. I was still in high school. That's right.
Lilu Dallas Multipass. Man, I love that movie.
That was a good movie.
I saw that in the theaters. Like, I was so pumped to see that movie. My dad took me. I think I was 12 when that movie came out? No, I was 11 when Fifth Element came out.
Mm.
So I got to see PG-13 when I was 11.
That's awesome. That's impressive, man.
Boobies.
And I'm certainly
has 11, dude. Yeah, no, she's pretty good, but it is getting kind of weird where she is like for no reason whatsoever. She's like fully naked in all the Resident Evil movies for no reason. Like they just found a reason to put her into like a test chamber where she's like suspended by water. Or a
was
shower.
She naked in the last one?
Yeah.
Man, you know, they freaking censor stuff here. Who knows what intricate and important detail plots I missed.
No, dude, it had lots to do with the action scenes.
Really?
No. No, she was naked, but no, I mean, it was just for funsies.
Right. Intricate, important plot line details.
I don't know what else is going on. I'm trying to burn time. I'm hoping Lee jumps on here. But see, it looks like they're canceling 30 Rock.
Really? Oh, that's sad. That's a funny ass show.
Terrible ratings.
Really?
Have you seen the trailer for the new movie Ted? I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we talked about it last time. It was hysterical.
Fringe is great. Did we talk?
They
about
have
Fringe?
A second trailer too, like a non-cursing trailer. And there are some funny parts of it, but it's just not, it's not even remotely close.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, I really think that it's a movie that's going to be much better unedited. It's like a movie made for Bostonians. It's great.
Of course, dude.
Let's see. Like, I have a friend who is a
liar.
No, he's a GA at BU, and he worked at Boyle's. And it that character is basically his voice. Like his that's how exactly how he talks.
The worst accent ever.
It's like, oh, right. Is it one of those names, but also a Lynn?
Yeah, that was great. worst accent ever, man. Oh, my God, worst accent ever.
Oh, come on. New York accents are way worse. Way
then
worse.
How? They're the... They are the standard of accents.
Yo, let's go to the Yankees. I can't do a New York accent.
You can't do any accent.
I can do an English accent.
Oh, boy.
I can do a Russian accent.
Oh, please.
The Hunt for Red October.
Oh, my God. That sounds like Sean Connery after he, like, bashes his head into a...
Red October, checking in.
That's not even Russian because he's not Russian.
I know that's a joke, John.
I don't believe you. I just don't believe you.
So, that's up.
All right. These are no show. Let's go.